We wanted to come to you today, Russell Brown and I am Kimberly Kirkendall, with information on China's VAT tax, along with some of the other customs duties and taxes that affect pricing. A lot of times clients will say to me, you know, VAT tax really doesn't affect us because we, you know, don't have an entity in China, or that's what my Chinese team handles, is, you know, paying the VAT tax. And so I think there's a real disconnect for a lot of companies in understanding how VAT in China in particular influences a lot of pricing, company decision-making, profitability measurements. So it's really important to understand VAT, especially Americans don't have VAT in our tax system. So there's not, you know, kind of an innate understanding of it the way that other countries in the EU and Australia also have their own VAT or version of VAT. So it's important to understand, so that you understand how it's affecting your business, which is more, as I said, than you probably realize. So we're going to get started here today with Russell Brown. Russell, you can say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Russell's going to start with VAT briefing and understanding, and then we're going to go back and forth a little bit as this presentation unfolds. So, Russell, please go ahead.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, so as Kim mentioned, actually, VAT is often misunderstood, particularly in the US, where you don't have the equivalent of VAT. I think it's better understood in places like Europe, where they do have a VAT system that is not, it's different, but it's not that indifferent from what China has created. And the key basis behind VAT is that the value that's being added along the supply chain ultimately goes to the final customer. And that's the original basis and foundation of VAT. And that's how China, over a number of years, has replaced what were originally, in effect, sales taxes to a value-added tax system. And the reason why, though, it does affect prices, and I'll come on to the more detailed calculations later, but basically, when you export from China, the sales are VAT exempt. But you've paid VAT on all your inputs because, as I mentioned, all the way along the whole chain, there's value-added tax included as it builds up. Now, HS codes, which we'll also talk later, determine what the VAT rate is. It also determines what the any other duties might be applied, and it also determines what the refund might be. And I'll talk about how the refund works later, but the point is, if the government suddenly changes what is a refund, then that also has a direct bearing on the cost or the price of a product that you're paying for or service. And so that's why VAT is not just an internal tax process within China, but it has a direct bearing on goods being exported from China because of the refund part. And it also has a direct bearing on products going into China because VAT is applied on everything that comes into China. All entities in China need to pay VAT. All people, if you go to a restaurant or you buy a product, you have VAT attached, but you're the end customer, so you're the end of the chain at that point. And then we have, outside of legal entities or companies, LLCs, you have what's called rep offices or branches, and they may or may not pay VAT on a deemed basis, depending on your location. All products, all services have VAT applied, and the administration of the VAT system is by the State Tax Bureau. And they have a software called the Golden Tax System, which gets upgraded regularly. It's probably the most sophisticated computer system in the world, given the billions of transactions that it transacts on an annual basis. But everything is matched through the system. And so basically, any transaction in China is subject to VAT. Any transaction coming into China is subject to VAT. Any transaction going out of China may be exempt. So the main type of VAT where you can do the offset, which is where the VAT follows all the way along the chain, is what we call general VAT payer. So you buy from a supplier and you pay VAT to the supplier. You sell to your customer. You apply VAT to your sales invoice. And then you claim back against your sales VAT what you've already paid. And you end up with a net of what you would pay within China. There is one other type of VAT payer for smaller businesses called small scale. And small scale has different VAT rates but it also doesn't allow the offset. So you pay your VAT input side, and you would pay VAT on the sales side. And there is a threshold of 5 million RMB. So once a company goes above 5 million RMB, then they would apply for general VAT payer. New companies going into China or setting up in China can become general VAT payer right at the beginning, as long as they can demonstrate within the application that they're going to be meeting those thresholds within the first year. But you always want to be a general VAT payer, particularly if you're manufacturing and trading. Services depends, because you can offset your input from your output, so you're not in effect double paying.
Let me unmute myself here. What's interesting also, Russell, is that oftentimes if you're exporting product into China and the company that's receiving the product and reselling it as a small scale VAT payer, a lot of the customers are uncomfortable with that, because even though they're paying a lower VAT rate when they're purchasing the product from your distributor in China, the small scale VAT payer, they can't apply for the offset. And so sometimes you can calculate for them that perhaps the net is the same, or the net is maybe even in their favor, but they're unfamiliar with or uncomfortable with buying from a company that's a small scale VAT payer. So even though it may appear that the tax effect is better with a small scale VAT payer, a lot of times your Chinese customers don't necessarily see that or feel that way about it. So sorry, and I'll go here to the next slide.
Yeah, that's right. And each VAT invoice, or FAPIAO as we call them, tax invoice, has a unique number, which gets matched to the golden tax system. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So the way that the VAT works is, within the golden tax system, you have your FAPIAO machine, or your computer linked with a machine. You raise your FAPIAO, your official VAT receipt, which gets sent to your customer. And when you buy something, you want that official receipt from your suppliers, any supplier. Each VAT receipt has a unique number, which gets input into the golden tax system, where you can match it. So your customer would take your unique number and they would verify it in the golden tax system, and that allows them to take that invoice as deductible. If there's no verification, then it's non-deductible. It's also a way that the Chinese system can ensure that I'm not saying there's no fake, but they minimize any risk of fake VAT receipts, which was an issue historically in China. But with the new system, because invoices need to be verified, it's in the company's best interest to verify those invoices so they can get the deduction of the VAT against their own VAT that they need to pay. We also have what's called the red invoice, and the red invoice is a credit note. So if you've issued a VAT receipt to your customer and they haven't paid you, or there's a dispute on the service or product you provided and you need to cancel that, then you would issue a credit note, or red VAT invoice, which would cancel that. It is possible to apply for E only, and that I think we're going to see that progress much more rapidly in the next year or two, as more and more companies move to E, credit or refund system. So first of all, I've mentioned that you would have, if you're doing domestic sales, you've got your sales VAT, you've got your input VAT, you net the two off and you pay the difference. Then the first question is there any VAT irrecoverable? An irrecoverable VAT would be from two elements. One is, are you doing domestic sales? So we need to separate out what is domestic versus what is export. Do you have goods that came in through bonded? So example, raw materials that are coming in bonded and then therefore haven't effectively come into the country. So you would take those out of the calculation. And then what is the difference between the VAT rate that you're paying on sales, or being exempt from but would be paying, and then the refund rate? So what is the refund rate? And the refund rate is basically, it can be zero for some products. It might be 100% of the VAT rate for others. But that's the critical part that can move. So when we go back to right at the beginning of this discussion, we were discussing about the fact that it can affect the pricing of a product. if you've got a company, for instance, that was receiving 12% VAT refund on a 13% VAT product, where normal sales would be 13%. So they're in effect getting almost the whole VAT back of what they're having to pay to their suppliers. If that suddenly changed overnight to go down to an 8% refund, then that means that it's costing the supplier in effect more. In other words, they're losing profit, and therefore by nature, they might review their sales price. And so that's where the VAT refund rate becomes very critical in terms of looking at the pricing of product. And we have had big adjustments. Going back about 12 years ago, they did a big reset of about 2,800 and odd products within a very short space of time. But continually, actually, we see updates. During COVID, they increased the VAT refund rate on a lot of products. Post-COVID, they might adjust it again.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, Russell. The Chinese government uses VAT rates as a way to move the economy in one direction or another. If they want to increase exports or decrease exports, if they want to benefit particular industries, it can be more broadly applied to the country as a whole. If they're concerned about the economy, if the economy is overheated, you know, they may decrease it. So it's always shifting, you know, as the government uses both the VAT rate itself as well as the offset rates that you get back on what you paid your supplier to manipulate the income. And so during COVID, one of the changes they made was dropping the top rate from 17% to 16%. So it's just an example recently of how they can make that change. That was a temporary change. It wasn't meant to be permanent, but it was meant to basically give Chinese companies a 1% benefit during the economic difficulty time of COVID.
So we say the Chinese government can giveth, but they can also take away. So, and it is. I mean, when we tell clients to look at their budgets or within their factories, we always say, if you're getting a VAT refund, apply some sensitivity analysis to see the impact of a change. Or if you're buying from suppliers, do some sensitivity analysis on what could happen and know what the rates are. So then with VAT, VAT is applied to the export value of goods. As I mentioned, you take out any imported material, you would apply the VAT refund rate, and then you would look at what would be refundable. So if the amount of VAT that you would have normally paid without exemption would have been higher than the VAT refund amount, then you would get the refund of the VAT that you've paid. If the VAT that would have been applied to the sales, if it wasn't exempt, is lower than the VAT that you've paid, then you would be able to get a refund of the amount up to that level, and then the difference would be a future credit carry forward. So every month this calculation will be done, and credits carry forward until they're utilized. There's no time limit, and refunds are applied for. I mean, they were typically taking a long time in a lot of the China, 6 to 12 months. So the government has been really pushing for that to be reduced, and places such as Shenzhen, for instance, trying to turn around the refunds within a couple of months or so now.
So it's not an overstatement to say that for a lot of Chinese companies, you know, or the majority of Chinese companies, calculating, paying, getting refunds on VAT is a critical part of their managing their business profitability. So it's very important to them to, you know, to monitor this. They have typically designated computer and designated staff who are managing VAT invoices, rebates, and filings. And so it's, you know, it's a big part of pricing decision making. And then if they're exporting, if the Chinese company is exporting, you know, and not charging their export customers VAT, which is the case in, you know, the majority of the situation, but they're still getting a refund on the VAT they paid when they bought raw materials, there are timing issues also. If they don't get paid for those exports by their foreign customer within a window of time, they lose the chance to apply for the rebate on what they paid their raw material suppliers. So you'll also see companies saying, and this happens in intercompany transactions, not just, you know, Chinese companies selling to customers overseas, where the intercompany may say, you know, to massage cash flow, we're going to delay payment between the US headquarters and the Chinese entity to over 90 days. And then the Chinese team is like, we're going to lose 5 or 15% if you do that, you know? So we need you to pay within 90 days because that's the window. So there are also timing issues with this, you know? So it's very important to have the correct documentation, that it's entered online, that it's, you can recognize it to the customer and the seller, that you're filing for your offsets and refunds, that you're doing it in a timely fashion. So there's a lot of managing VAT is a very big part of any accounting department in China's responsibilities.
That's right, Kim, because basically every invoice needs to be put into the system to match. You're offsetting your input VAT from your exports, which is your food customs. The customs is linked to the State Administration of Foreign Exchange to match that you've been paid for the goods that you've exported, which then links to the bank. So it's all interlinked. We've had some customers who were doing consolidated containers of many different parts with different VAT rates. And they would often get themselves in a mess because they'd leave it to the last minute at year end, and then suddenly they'd be trying to match all the invoices. And if they had any invoices that wouldn't match, that would affect their overall refunds and then the netting and the matching of everything. So within China, domestic sales normally simplified VAT calculation, but on export, or if you're in an exempt category, then you'd be exempt. If you've got general VAT payer for manufacturing, you've got the credit exempt refund applied. If you're trading as a trading company, then you can get exempt and refund. And then, but you may also be able to, depending on whether the manufacturer is claiming the credit or you're claiming the credit. So often there's also discussion whether if you're a trading company that's bringing in suppliers and then exporting together, who's only one company can claim the credit. So it's who's, and the exemption. So who's claiming the credit and the exemption. And that's also something that has to be discussed during the supply chain. So here I've just got an example just to show how the VAT works. So not a very sexy name, but company ABC. This particular company, the normal VAT rate applied to finished products would be 13%. The export VAT refund rate for that finished product, so that's, as I mentioned, what you've paid as input from the suppliers, would be 9%. So here, domestic sales are 1 million in the current month. Export sales are 2 million. Exported import materials, so exempted import materials, is 200,000. So the input VAT occurring on domestic purchases was 680,000. The creditable input VAT brought forward was 50,000. So if we apply the formulas on the next slide for all of these, so the VAT payable for the current month is calculated. So first of all, you take the million times 13%. So that's the domestic sales. You take off the 680,000, which is the domestic input VAT paid. But then you have to make an adjustment for what is allowable or not allowable. So you take your export sales, which is 2 million, minus the 200,000, well, that's the imported part that you would take off. And then the difference between the 13%, which is the normal VAT, and the refund rate, which is 9%. And then you've got 50,000, which is a carry forward. So you'd work out the formula to come up with 528,000 as the VAT payable, or you would normally pay. But then the ceiling you've got is actually, as I mentioned, there's a ceiling based on your export sales. The ceiling is 2 million minus 200,000 times by 9%. So that's 162. So then you would say, okay, which is higher? Well, obviously the 528. So you would say this 162 would be refundable. And then the balance between the two, the would be the amount that's creditable and carry forward. So that will be carried forward to the next month. So you get, so there is an exemption on the sale, but then you work out on your input VAT what you can get back now, which is refundable, and what part of the VAT that can't be refunded now, so it's creditable, so it carry forwards to the next month.
Guaranteed, I always say, to give everyone a headache, VAT calculation.
Yeah.
We often sit down with clients with spreadsheets and go through, if you're buying from four, you know, importing into the United States from four different suppliers in China, they're all able to secure that VAT refund without charging you VAT. But if you suddenly say, I want one of those suppliers to buy from the other three and consolidate or assemble the product before it's shipped to the United States, those three suppliers now have to charge VAT to the fourth one because it's a domestic sale. And then the fourth one could get a refund on part of that when they're selling it to you, but it could change your price. You know, so when you're shifting things in China from buying from different suppliers, or you start consolidating or kitting product, or they're selling it to your Chinese entity who's exporting it to you, and now they're just going to export it to you directly, all of those things will change your price, you know, because that changes how much they pay and how much they can offset in VAT. So to say that it's complicated is an understatement, but we wanted to start off with that today. And these slides are available if anyone wants to view them, you know, contact us and let us know. But before we end up today, we wanted to go forward and some of the other things that affect this, one of which is HS codes. And HS codes are, or HTS codes, we use both names. Those are the codes that are used and agreed upon, generally speaking, internationally, that define what your product is. And that product definition is what allows customs in China and the United States and Australia and all the other countries to understand what types of duties or tariffs or regulatory certifications or checks need to be placed on your product. So these codes have at the very least 6 digits and sometimes 8 and sometimes 10. And then anything past the first 6 can be defined by the country in specifically, but the first 6 tend to be pretty standard. So the first 2 are the chapter. And if you're looking at the slide here, you can see I'm using HS code 0901.21.0010. 09 means that it's some type of coffee, tea, mate, spice. And then 0901 means it's more specifically coffee. So we've now narrowed it down and it no longer applies to tea or mate or other things. So then we narrow it further and say it's 0901.21. And that's roasted coffee, and that eliminates other kinds of coffees and decaffeinated coffees. And then we can zero it down even farther to 0901.21.00, and then add another 10 on the end. And those last 4 numbers often clarify what duties are applied, or if there's any specific packaging requirements. Or so a lot of times in conversation, companies will give you the first 6 numbers, sometimes the first 8 numbers, not always all 10, you know. And then Russell here in a second is going to talk about how the HS codes are aligned or misaligned, you know, or how they differ between international codes and what the Chinese use.
Yeah, so Chinese codes versus international. Standard international have 8 digits, and it can, as Kim mentioned, be extended beyond that, depending on the country. And the Chinese coding system actually extends out to 13. But it follows exactly the same structure, where you've got the main category, then the main subcode, then the main sub-subcode, and then it narrows down. When a client first says to us, what VAT are we going to pay, or customs duty, consumption tax on import, or what's a VAT refund on export, the first thing I'll ask them is, what is your HS code? And then we would look at the HS code international categorization, and then we would match it to the Chinese categorization and try and find the appropriate category within China. So we would map it, and then we would look at, and then that would, within the catalog, would tell us exactly what it would cost bringing goods in and what it costs taking goods out. That's the first thing that we ask, is what is your HS code? And if there are any trading overseas, they will know what their HS code is on the category, because that's what goes on all the customs goods, export or import documentation.
Yeah, one of the things in typical situations, the HS codes that you'd use, you know, in the US or Australia or Canada would be typically the same as what you would use in China, but not always. So it's always a good idea to double check. HS codes, you can find those by searching online. And there's a conversation oftentimes of which is the correct HS code for my product. One of the examples I use is we received a call from a company last year saying we're making heated yoga mats, which is a brilliant idea because I hate taking my yoga mat out of my car when it's cold outside and going in, laying down on it and it's freezing cold. So I love heated yoga mats. But are you going to import it as a heated mat, which is more of like a heated blanket category? Or are you going to import it as a yoga mat, which is a very different category? And they both have not only different duties, but also different, potentially different regulatory, because one involves electrical and heating and the other one doesn't. So there's a lot of decision-making that actually goes involved into just making sure you have the right HS code. It's not straightforward, is the final point I'd like to make on that subject. But we wanted to talk about other taxes that apply in import-export. So Russell, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yes, it's important, as I mentioned, goods coming in and goods going out. So take goods coming into China. The HS code determines not just the VAT rate, but it also determines the import duties and the consumption tax. A consumption tax is not levied on all goods, but it is levied on luxury good items and certain items like cigarettes, tobacco, and luxury cars would come into this. So we would look at what is being applied, what the HS code is, and what they would pay in consumption tax, if anything. And then we would also look at the duties and what duties would be payable, because it would determine what the import duties are, just as now, especially with the US-China trade issues. You know, there's import duties in the taking goods from China into the US, which Kim will talk about in a minute. But you've also got import increase in import duties of goods coming into China because of that, the trade issues. And it's not just between the US and China. There's Europe has, even though there is China has most favored nation category, there's still import duties on certain products. So we would always look at the codes. And just as Kim mentioned, a classification of a yoga mat, we've had clients where they've got products that may be in different parts, like customs bringing goods in. So we have some clients that decide to use bonus, the cash flow of bringing products in, particularly goods that have higher import duties, higher VAT import duties and consumption tax. Then they may bring products into a bonded warehouse, and then only bring those products out the bonded warehouse and pay those at that point of sale as a way of reducing the cash flow burden by paying them all up front on the importation of products. Of course, there's the cost of warehousing then. It would be a balancing act whether it's worth doing or not. But you know, I've got one client, for instance, that brings in high-value watches. So they keep the watches in a bonded warehouse and they would only pay the VAT import duty consumption tax at the point when they take it out of the bonded warehouse and treat it as an import at that point for the sale. So the way the pecking order works, first of all, you've got your HS codes, you've checked what the duties are. You would apply customs duty, which is to the dutiable value of a product. So it's actually the landed value. So the landed value is the value of the product plus the shipping and the insurance. So it's the landed value. We first apply customs duty. We then apply consumption tax, and lastly, we apply value-added tax to the combination of the dutiable value plus the customs duty plus the consumption tax. So obviously, if there's customs duty applied first and then there's consumption duty and then you've got VAT on top, luxury goods can have a very high amount added onto the value of that product when it's landed. And for pricing of products within China, if you're bringing your own product into China to on-sell, you need to make sure that you factored in all of this properly to be, first of all, within the right code, paying the right duties, and then, of course, making sure that your sales price sufficiently incorporates all of that as well.
When you're doing a cost analysis or a competitive analysis to see how your product stacks up in the market, against other products in China, this would be very important, you know, on the inbound side, because you'd want to make sure you know what your fully landed and taxed cost is as it goes into whether it's your own entity or a distributor in China, so that you can calculate the profits on top of that and see whether you're still competitive or not. So it's not just about, you know, what you're selling it to China or Europe or whoever it is, whatever that cost is, but also how much does it cost once it's in the country and all of these taxes have been applied.
Some companies will sell a product that includes the warranty or includes the implementation services, which are carried out maybe by the US in some way. Obviously, if you're paying these duties on the total value of that invoice, you want to separate out the service element. Only the product value coming in is applied to this. Any overseas support for implementation is charged in separately.
That's a great point, Russell. And it's also true if you're amortizing tooling in the cost of the goods. Let's say you're importing product from China and they've bumped the price up to include tooling. You're now paying duties and tariffs on that tooling amount. On the converse side, you could be a company that is, because I have a client in this situation right now, who is buying some materials in China or Japan. They're sending them to the Chinese factory to be included in the product. But when they're being invoiced by the Chinese factory, that invoice price does not include those other materials. And so they're importing it into the US at a falsely low value, which could become a problem with customs. It's called an assist, that you're assisting that supplier by providing them goods or raw materials, components that they're then shipping to you. So if the Chinese factory purchased those raw materials or components, they might charge you $2.50 a piece, and instead they're charging you $2 because you're paying 50 cents for the raw material and the component directly to those other suppliers. So the cost of your goods coming into the country are lower than the true cost should be. So that's a conversation you need to have to make sure that, you know, you're not creating a problem for yourself, because customs will go after companies that are doing that and they incur penalties. They'll fine you. So let's look a little bit at US tariffs. It can be difficult to find out if your product is on the tariff list. I would think most companies know by now, but also then what is the current status? So step one is finding out if your product is on the lists, and they're separated in the list 1, 2, 3, 4A or 4B. And then secondly, has an exclusion been granted for your product? And then third, is the exclusion still in effect? Not always easy to do. I've included here on the slide, there's a website in the US, United States Trade Representative West website, ustr.gov, where there's a searchable section down at the bottom here. You enter in your 8-digit HTS code, and it tells you if you're on one of those tariff lists. So that's the easiest of those steps. Finding out if there's an exclusion for your product is a little bit more complicated. You really have to go, once you know what list it's in, you have to go to where there's a list of exclusions, and then you have to scan down and see if your HTS code has been given an exclusion. And in many cases, it doesn't eliminate the tariff, it just reduces it. Some lists in whole have been delayed so that tariffs have not been enacted. In most cases, these exclusions expired at the end of 2020, and then they were extended through the end of March, and they expired again. There's a bill that was passed just in the last couple of days by the Senate that is a recovery bill. Buried in there, there's a trade section. And in that trade section, it actually extends the previous exclusions again through the Senate's version, extends it through the end of 2022. And then it also makes it easier to apply for new exclusions. Now, this is the US inbound tariff situation. There's also a China inbound tariff situation, which is very similar. We're showing a graph here on where the tariffs are and how they've moved, and the aggregate numbers have moved and changed since the tariffs were enacted in 2018. But China has the same kind of tariff system on products from the US coming into China. There are also exclusions on the products coming into China, just as there are in the United States. So you really need to go to the China side and have either your freight forwarder, your customs broker, your partners research this, and we could help you with that as well. But, you know, is your product on China's tariff list if you're exporting to China? Has an exclusion been granted, and would your product category or your company be able to make use of that exclusion? So it's all, great deal of research. So hopefully we've given you a lot of good information today that you can use to understand China's VAT tax system, how it affects products that are you're exporting into China, how it affects your suppliers and companies that you own in China, and how they manage their sales and export and refund. We will take questions now if anyone has any, and we're going to post where this will be available online for later viewing, because I know it's a lot of information to take in. Russell, do you have any last-minute comments?
I think the main thing is, as you can see from Kim's graph, the tariffs has become a major element of the sort of geopolitics. And we can expect, I think, for tariffs to keep changing, hopefully reducing for goods going into China and reducing for goods going from China into the US. But I think when companies are factoring in, doing their budgets and factoring in all the duties either way, it's important to do sensitivity analysis, looking at the what if. Because even if you're buying from suppliers and you think, well, they're just selling to me at a price, well, if there is the what if to them, and it's going to affect their own operations in China of your supplier, which could affect them talking to you about their sales price, it's worth looking at their what if, because so the conversations could be had in advance of what would happen in this situation.
Yeah, because oftentimes your Chinese suppliers, you know, or customers are not necessarily communicating to you, or distributors, that they've received a bump of 2 or 3% because of a change in tariffs or VAT refunds. And they may not inform you that if you're exporting into China, that your product price has decreased or increased because of that also. But something you really need to take care with. And one other thing I would mention before we wrap it up here is people are always asking me, with Biden's presidency this year, do we think that the tariffs will go away? And my answer is no. I don't think it's the top of Biden's list. I don't think he could be seen as being soft on China, because there's too much political pressure against China right now. So I think the tariffs will be left in place. But I do think that this new bill that they're considering, where they'll take additional exclusions, it allows them to leave the tariffs in place and basically exclude a lot of products from the tariffs. So I think that may be the shell game that we're playing going forward here. We still have tariffs. They're just not going to impact people very much in the future. Hopefully, I think that's the direction we might be moving in. So I'm going to stop the recording now. Thank you all very much for participating and listening. Thank you again, Russell. And I look forward to the next program that we're holding, which will be in a week. We're going to do another program on transfer pricing.